But he did say, well, look, networks grew 13%.
Yeah.
Dell'Oro says that overall market grew 8%. Do the fucking maths.
Yeah.
He seemed to say.
Yeah.
I'd love it if he actually said that.
Drop the mic.
That would be a really good quote, yeah. If he said it exactly that way.
If suddenly all this sort of polished corporate veneer dropped. Yep. Hello and welcome to another telecoms.com podcast. That's my third take because Ian distracted me the first time. We're still in the office, obviously, and everything's groovy. And telecoms.com live went very well. Thank you very much for asking. If you're watching this on the site or on Facebook or on YouTube, you can listen to it on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and lots of other things. Right, we're going to crack on because, as ever, Pierre's got some important stuff to do in about an hour. So we are going to start by talking about quarterly. It's quarterly season, and we've had two of the three big kit vendors, which we write about all the time, report to some extent their quarterlies.
Mm. One more than the other.
Yeah, one more than the other. So we're going to talk about that. That's going to lead into a couple more of our tried and tested topics of sort of China.
Yep.
Sort of, and Open RAN. So those are the three things we're going to chat about. So quarterlies, we had Ericsson and Huawei. Now, the reason we're saying sort of reported is Ericsson's a publicly traded company, so they have to do it all the proper way. Huawei isn't, which is probably one of the reasons it has all the nonsense that it gets from the US. If it was public, presumably, and there was more transparency around its numbers, maybe there'd be more trust about the way it runs in general. I don't know. Mm-hmm. To be honest, at this stage, probably not. But anyway.
But it doesn't help their case that they've become more and more secretive, it seems, while things have been going on.
Well, we'll build up to that. I think we'll talk about Ericsson first because Ericsson's numbers, at least in the way I editorialised it today, sort of feed into Huawei's numbers a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you wrote up Ericsson's numbers as well and as usual did a better job than me, so I'll let you...
I'll try and remember them now. There's quite a lot of moving parts. But
I've just put you on a pedestal. Again, you're the man and now you can't even remember.
Yeah, I think headline sales are up about 1%, but 7% I think organic or something like that. So
7% adjusted for adjustments.
Adjusted for adjustments. Yeah, which is pretty good. And a lot of it's driven. I mean, my main takeaway, and I think I went with a headline as well, was that it seems to owe a lot to China. If you look at the sort of regional breakdown, that region's up like dramatically, something like almost 40%, I think, growth.
Yes, Northeast Asia, as they call it.
And this all comes on the back of weeks and weeks of news about how China's sort of really going all guns blazing with its 5G rollout. And there's going to be, I think Ericsson's networks boss, Frederick Yedling, was saying about 500,000 base stations by the end of the year in that country, which is
like
an insane figure.
How many? What's the total base station count for the UK, do you think?
Like, number of mobile sites, for instance, that BT has is about 19,000.
And they're one of four.
But there's the shared infrastructure as well. So.
Oh, right. So we're probably talking about 60,000
maybe,
sites.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, it is a ridiculous amount of base stations. And Ericsson's always said one of the reasons it wants to get more sort of involved in the Chinese market and try and grow its share there is because... they came out of this figure, I remember, a year ago or maybe a year and a half when Ekholm said, they account for, I mean, maybe he was exaggerating a bit, but he was saying they account for about 60% of the 4G market in terms of equipment sold.
Yeah.
And therefore, he was saying there's no reason why it's going to be different in 5G, and therefore it's a market we think we should get a bigger share of. We need to sort of fight for that. So the thing is, their share's tiny. They have about 11.5% of the phase one contract with China Mobile, and they've won similar deals up in the Telecom and Unicom.
I think we're thinking 10 to 12%.
It's all pretty much Huawei and ZTE.
Say tiny, I mean, that's obviously...
It's tiny, but it's tiny share of a huge market. It's a huge amount of work. And, you look at the market share, the sort of market projections that the analyst companies are coming out with this year, and the one that's sort of used most heavily by Ericsson and Nokia is Dell'Oro. They're very sort of... seem to be very trustworthy stats. The companies base their assumptions on it. And it was saying... the RAN market this year, I think, it was stunning. It's like up 8% because of China. You take China out and it's basically flat.
And their previous forecast was 4%, so they doubled it.
Yeah, so China's obviously thought we need to kind of like really crack on with this. And And it sort of vindicates. And the other interesting thing, so that was the first takeaway, is that, you know, it's all driven by China. And then my other main thing was profitability is looking really good at Ericsson. You know, it's like, I think the operating margin in the quarter was 15% maybe. They're well on track to hit this target of 10% this year. And there was all this worry in the second quarter about competing aggressively for these Chinese contracts and what impact that would have on profitability. In fact, they'd flagged that themselves.
Yeah.
They'd said it's going to affect margins. They took a bit of a hit, but not a massive one, but it sort of paid off. They sort of vindicated
that was exactly the headline I went with, this getting some ROI.
You know, it was a really good quarter, I think, for them. I mean, there's problems in other areas. You know, the network stuff's really going strong. This decision to go and compete aggressively in China has paid off. All these investments they say they've made in R&D seem to be translating into cost competitiveness and a good set of products. But if you look outside networks, that's where the problems are. So digital services and managed services have still got question marks over them.
Yeah.
That digital services turnaround doesn't seem to be happening very quickly at all.
I've got to say something to butt in, Pierre.
Yeah.
Are you sure that bit of wall that you just replaced is in shot?
Oh, bloody hell.
Because it fell off while Ian was... Oh, it's too late now. It's already happened. I just thought it was quite funny. I thought I'd address the elephant in the room because while Ian was talking, bits of wall are falling off behind him. What kind of a Mickey Mouse operation is this?
I think we should have like video footage of walls crumbling around as well while we speak on the podcast.
It's just that bit of wall there is particularly knackered. The rest of it's all nice and symmetrical and orderly, and then it's just a mess
it's just
behind you there.
It's symbolic of the state of the world these days,
There's a door there, is there?
And I don't know, they didn't stick it.
Someone tried to get in.
There's a bog on the other side of this.
But
why is there a door?
No, the bog stops here.
Oh, okay.
This is the back, I don't know what's in there. Maybe it's a secret.
Anyway.
Panic room.
And so for anyone who's listening to this on audio, they'll just be wondering what the hell we're talking about. But I just thought I had to address it. It was just so funny.
Our
while studio's talking,
falling apart,
bits
basically.
Of studio
bits
falling
of foam flying around.
Yeah. Yes, and it was solid quarter, but quite China-centric.
Yeah,
And an interesting thing, like doing a bit of maths, I spoke to Frederick Yedling on the phone as well, and, you know, they're very cagey. You try and draw them on anything directly competitive, especially where it affects Huawei or ZTE for that matter, but primarily Huawei, or anything to do with China. They're very cagey. And of course, if they're currently coining it in China, that kind of explains it.
Yeah.
It would, I mean, to generalise massively, but...
Well, they're cagey about Huawei, but they're not so cagey about their non-Chinese rivals. They're
quite
happy to come out and slag them off, it seems.
And, you know, I'm going to generalise about Swedes, but on the whole, they're quite sort of circumspect. They're like the opposite of like Americans. They're not going to be bombastic. They're going to be quite understated as a generalisation. Obviously, like Hans Vestberg. It fell down again. Just leave it now.
Okay.
Obviously, Hans Vestberg's not typically Swedish in that way, which is probably why he's doing well at Verizon, the US company.
Yeah.
But anyway... But one thing, so when I was sort of going, so where, you know, they were alluding to the fact that they've increased their overall share of the RAN market, weren't they?
Yeah, I think they're tracking about a one percentage point increase per year at the moment.
Right, and I went to him, so who have you got that off then?
Yeah.
And obviously he wouldn't say anything. But...
But it was said in the earnings call.
Well, I linked to your superior coverage, that because you listened to the earnings call. I couldn't be bothered to get my act together in time because it kicks off about 8.
That is pretty early.
8,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's far too early for me. 8. I can still taste the toothpaste at 8. They basically, well, you tell me because I linked to your story. What did they say on that?
Well, it was almost the first thing that Börje Ekholm said when he came on the earnings call is that we've continued to sort of grow market share in Europe specifically at the expense of non-Chinese competitors, was how he put it.
So if you
take out Huawei and ZTE, you've only really got Nokia and Samsung. And Samsung's very marginal.
There's not
in
much
Europe.
To take from them.
So they basically mean Nokia. And
but they have to skirt around it.
They have to skirt
they
around and they can't just say Nokia.
We're kicking Nokia's ass.
Yeah, and I guess they... You know, it's interesting because Nokia's seemed to be on a bit of a resurgence itself over the last few weeks. There's been some good news stories for Nokia. I mean, there's been some negative ones as well, I guess. They were perceived to have lost out big time in the US when Verizon announced this huge contract with Samsung to build the 5G network, which is very much seen as picking Samsung as its second supplier after Ericsson. And, you know, people have been thinking that might be Nokia. So that's not so good. And it'd be interesting to see what they have to say about that when they report next week. But certainly in Europe, they've got an expanded contract with BT now to swap out some Huawei equipment. And they also appear to fend off Ericsson in a competitive bid with Proximus and Orange in Belgium. They were the ones that got picked for the radio side there. So they've had a couple of wins they can shout about.
And they got all of Telia's core.
Yes, there's the core stuff as well.
I know, you quite rightly put core compared to RAN.
Yeah, it's not as big, but it's still, you know, it's still
better than a kick in
the business. But I think the you know, speaking to Yedling as well, he was sort of saying it's you know, it has come at, I was saying, well, where have the market share gains come from? Is it winning deals with new customers, or is it just sort of expanding your footprint in there, you know, in with your business with them? And he said it's largely the latter. And the thing is, this is why I think all this stuff about we've got 113 5G deals and 60 networks, or, well, we've got 120 and 70 networks, it doesn't really tell you what's going on, a lot of that stuff, because they all, you know, in multi-vendor networks, they all tend to have a role in them anyway. You know, Ericsson's often in the same service provider that Nokia is and that Huawei is sometimes.
Yeah, so what people like you and I are always looking for is...
It's what percentage they have. And you don't get that information very often. I mean, it's sometimes comes out in analyst reports, the sort of people that we talk to. And sometimes you're at press conferences and it gets talked about. And it's been, in the UK in particular, it's been talked about at parliamentary conferences recently, because the CTO's got put in front of politicians and asked, how much does Huawei provide? And it's quite clear now in the UK what that picture looks like. But you often don't know what it is in other parts of the world, and you don't know how it's evolving. And from what Yedling was saying, it sounds like they've basically been able to up their share of the RAN footprint in some deals.
Yeah.
And I know two very significant ones that Ericsson has claimed at Nokia's expense. One is, I mean, they're not new though. One's with Deutsche Telekom in Germany, where it came in back in sort of late 2017. And completely, you know, with a job to completely replace Nokia across quite a big chunk of the footprint, about a third, I think.
Yeah, it was a big blow for Nokia.
And the other one's with Vodafone UK, where they used to use Nokia in London, and they might still have it there to some extent, but certainly Ericsson's been phasing that out and
yeah, because my gut feel, until I sort of read your account of it, my gut feel was, if it's gaining market share in Europe, it must be at the expense of Huawei.
Yeah,
because there are deals
where it can say that it's come in instead of Huawei. There's a few notable ones, but maybe they just haven't shown up yet in results.
Or maybe this is another example of them trying to downplay it, because, you know, I don't want to jump the gun, because we're going to sort of zero in on the more geopolitical stuff. But I get the impression that in their public statements, Ericsson are being very careful not to say anything that might look at all cheeky in a Chinese direction.
This is a failing of mine, perhaps. I should have, maybe when we were talking about the market share stuff with Yedling, have said, well, hang on a minute, you've landed a deal with TDC recently that's come at Huawei's expense. You've landed deals in Scandinavia, but
that would have been funny.
You only get 10 minutes with him, so
yeah, and he would have been properly cagey.
Yeah,
but yes, you know, that's what we do. I think. And one thing, when I asked him about this, and he was cagey and obviously wouldn't name any countries or anything, but he did say, well, look, networks grew 13%.
Yeah.
Dell'Oro says that overall market grew 8%. Do the fucking maths,
yeah.
He seemed to say.
Yeah.
I'd love it if he actually said that.
Drop the mic.
That would be a really good quote, yeah, if he said it exactly that way.
If suddenly all this sort of polished corporate veneer drops,
it will go viral.
And he's like, do you want me to draw your picture, son? So 5% above the market, which means its rivals are 5% below the market.
Yeah, yeah.
Crudely doing the maths. Fair play to on that. And I think the truth is probably a combination. So, you know, when you talk at Nokia's expense, obviously a big area, you know, I don't know how much RAN stuff Nokia ever had in China, but now it's got none.
Well, it still has 4G RAN stuff, and it still has 3G RAN stuff.
Specifically 5G. And that's where the growth is. So that's where a lot of its growth at Nokia's expense could have happened, as opposed to in Europe. Because sometimes, I know they were
They are saying in Europe, though. They're saying the footprint in Europe. They're not talking about the China stuff. Now, that's clearly happened. I think they've picked up work that Nokia would have had otherwise. I mean, I think actually what's happened in China is the Western vendors have actually lost market share in China with the transition to 5G. It used to be that those two companies played a bigger role than they did. Now it's almost 90% Huawei and ZTE with 5G. But the difference is Nokia's not there at all.
Yeah.
So Ericsson's gone up a bit and Nokia's vanished.
Yeah.
But so if you got 12%, if you look at them together, it's less than they used to have, probably. Yeah.
Huawei must have about 50% of that market.
I think it's quite an even, apparently, I mean, even this is split. Probably why ZTE does quite well
then they've got 44% each then.
Yeah, I think ZTE's got a lot of it as well.
Right,
and that's why they can, you know, everybody's been wondering about ZTE for years. Can they sort of survive? And
including you.
But they, you know, it's obviously just coming from China, I think, a lot of it. It's because there's 500,000 base stations being built and you've got almost half of them, then
Xi Jinping would have made sure. I mean, that's why I thought it was remarkable that Ericsson got what it did, to be honest.
Yeah.
Not that it doesn't deserve it on merit, but because of the greater political control of the economy there than we have here, I would have thought Xi Jinping were like, let's just give all the business to these two, make sure the Yanks can't knock them out of the game.
One thing I thought was really interesting, though, in this sort of Nokia versus Ericsson argument that's going on at the moment, is there was sort of, you know, they're a bit coy, they're a bit cagey, like you say. They certainly don't want to criticise the Chinese, and they won't even name Nokia directly.
No.
But there's sort of, you read between the lines of the sort of comments that are coming out in the earnings call, and Nokia's sort of had this very sort of public upset in 5G where they made this decision to use field programmable gate arrays in the products.
Pricier chips,
basically. Yeah. The implication was that it was going to be harder for them to compete on cost because their margins were pretty thin.
Mm-hmm.
You had your rivals using what are called application-specific integrated circuits,
cheaper
which are
chips.
Cheaper chips. and Eric and Ecom actually specifically mentioned ASICs on the call, which is not the sort of thing you hear CEOs bringing up, delving into technology and that.
So you think he's having a bit of a dig?
Yeah, I mean, he was saying our R&D investments in, you know, that allows us to increase the pace of churning out, you know, ASICs is one of the reasons we're so cost competitive. And it was almost like a direct
dig. He's definitely having a pop there, isn't he?
At Nokia.
Just in a sort of Nordic understated way.
Yeah, and then I went back and looked at the gross margins actually for the two companies on the network side. And it's not an easy comparison to make because Ericsson's obviously mobile only, and Nokia has, you know, IP, optical, fixed line stuff as well. But the mobile's still about two-thirds of Nokia's sales.
Right.
And their margins, I think, they're going up since they've started phasing out these expensive chips and moving to cheaper ones. The margins have been improving. But the last quarter, the second quarter, there's still only about 34%. You look at Ericsson's on the network side, they're about 45% now, the gross margin. So it's a huge 10 percentage point difference on that network's business. It's gonna translate into some kind of pricing advantage, you're bound to think.
Or they can spend more on R&D, whatever.
Exactly.
Yes. Is it, when Nokia does its quarterlies this week, is this the first one that Pekka's doing?
It's the first one with, the new guy in charge. And a new CFO as well, so it's a totally new team presenting.
Do you think either of us is going to write a childish headline with Pekka in it?
It's tempting. I look at my previous stories and regret not having done it before, actually.
Yeah.
So,
I'm trying to work out. I'm already thinking of, like, Pekka up.
Pecking order.
Nokia keeps its Pekka up.
Yeah, there we go.
Something like that. It would be the other way around, really, though, maybe. Pekka keeps his Nokia up.
Well, indeed. So, yes, we've got that to look forward to.
The bad stuff in, I mean, we mentioned it briefly, but the bad stuff in Ericsson's report was the digital services, really.
And managed services, really.
Managed services, but digital's been this sort of ailing unit for quite a long time now. And that's the one thing that, you know, Ecom's done a really, really good job, I think everybody would agree, since coming along in early 2017, turning around that business. I mean, they've had to sell a lot of stuff and they've had to shed quite a lot of employees, but they're now a very profitable company compared to what they were.
Yeah, I mean, the manoeuvre, as far as I can tell, I haven't got an MBA, I've never been in charge of anything, but the manoeuvre, as far as I'm concerned, I can tell, is like that sort of Orwellian phrase, right-sizing.
Yeah.
Basically, here's our revenue, here's our overheads, they're wrong. Right now our overheads are greater than our revenues. Let's get it so that on a sustainable basis, our revenues are greater than our overheads. And actually, the way companies tend to do that is by cutting overheads, i.e. laying people off and streamlining and all that sort of thing. And he's already done that with networks, but it looks like that process is still ongoing with those other two divisions.
And they're just not on track, though. That's the thing. I mean, I think networks has always been, since he came in, he's always managed to sort of keep it to expectations, whereas digital services, they're probably not going to meet the targets they'd set.
No.
And they were saying, I think, on the call that all this cloud native stuff they've been going on about, yeah, they've got some contracts, but there's no revenues coming in from any of that yet.
Right.
And meanwhile, the legacy products that are causing them so much pain are just declining faster than they expected. So it's like, it's a really difficult one for them. But I mean, the fortunate thing is it doesn't account for all that much in terms of revenue compared to the network side of things.
Networks is like 2/3 or something of all of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it's still, it must give Boyer the arsehole to every quarter be apologising for those other divisions.
Yeah, and you don't want to get rid of that, I suppose, because the core is important. It's a way into other deals. It could be potentially really important.
So digital services is basically the core?
Well, that's part of it. That's only one aspect of digital services. But core network products are sold under digital services. It's not part of the network's business. And it's the same with Nokia. Yeah, so Nokia's software division sells all the core stuff, whereas the networks is... For Nokia, it's mobile fixed, IP optical, that sort of thing. But
because digital services used to be things like sort of BSS. And
it
all
did,
that.
And that's there as well.
That, didn't they? Bits of it, anyway.
With Ericsson.
Yeah.
Maybe.
They did. About a couple of years ago, they certainly flogged some BSS stuff.
And they shut some stuff down.
And then managed services is more, like sort of system integrator type of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. Professional services jobs.
Yeah, and they were in some really stupid deals.
Yeah,
where they'd just taken like loss leaders, presumably because they thought they might.
Yeah, they're trying to get out of those in the same way they're trying to get out of some digital services stuff. Yeah. But it's just
okay.
They're problematic, those two units. But the nice thing is that the main thing's doing very nicely. Thank you very much. So
yeah, and then so moving on to Huawei, they're not a public company. They don't really have to announce anything.
Yeah.
And there's variability in what they do announce. So they just came out today, the Huawei numbers, and they basically only told us revenue and...
The margin.
And margin, and that was it.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, they've broken it out by big business group, i.e.
It's carrier, enterprise and consumer, isn't
there
it,
we
usually?
Go. Yeah. And they didn't this time. Now, probably the reason they didn't is because one of those groups probably did exceptionally badly, and I speculated about that. But the top line was that for the first 9 months of the year, growth was about 10%, whereas a year ago it was like 24%.
Yeah.
And then specifically, if you look at just Q3, the FT did some maths, and they worked out that grew at 3.3%, whereas Q3 2019 grew at 27%.
Yeah.
So that year-on-year comparison is obviously very unflattering, implies a massive slowdown. Now, none of that is by itself incredibly surprising, given the shit that Huawei's had to deal with this year. But the fact that it chose to not give any granularity is interesting. And I just did a sort of back-of-fag packet maths and thought, OK, so if growth's slowed right down, but... according to Ericsson numbers, there's plenty of cash coming in from Chinese 5G.
Yeah.
Then Ericsson's networks division is probably still doing all right. This is my guess.
Huawei's.
Huawei's.
Yeah.
You know, feel free to correct this. It's a very sort of sketchy assumption. I don't have any information one way or the other to make any assumptions about enterprise, but that would strike me as the bit that's likely to be least affected by American action against them.
Yeah, and it's quite small anyway, the enterprise unit, I think, in comparison to the other two. But,
so that leads me to conclude that its consumer divisions had a bit of a mare, and that's where most of the slowdown must have come from.
I agree, and I think the only thing I'd say about networks is if they're doing you know, based on Ericsson's results, if we extrapolate from that, and Huawei's got a huge share of that market,
40-50%,
and you might think that, you know, especially given all the other stuff that's going on for them in terms of losing business in some markets and getting banned, and that's having an impact on the results. It is all coming from China. It's not like, I mean, you know, they still have a big position in Africa and the Middle East, obviously.
But they've obviously lost work in Europe.
But they're losing work in Europe. And I mean, we've talked about this before, that probably the European business is probably dead.
Well, and we might as well mention it now. I mean, there was another clear proof point of that, which is Sweden.
Yeah.
Just laying out that there was no, funnily enough, you know, me having generalised about the Swedes being a bit understated, they are also, to generalise, in my personal experience, quite straight talking.
Yeah.
And so their, you know, their bureaucracy in charge of comms just went, right, we're going to do a 5G spectrum auction, and you can't use Huawei or ZTE if you win.
It was quite out of the blue, wasn't it, as well? Yeah. It wasn't like there'd been any sort of whisperings about this. All of a sudden, I remember this statement coming through, and I went to the sort of regulator's website, and it's like, and it wasn't even, like you say, the way the UK does it is to use euphemisms like high-risk suppliers, and I think France does the same thing. Whereas the Swedes just went, Huawei and ZTE, no, you're not having
it's
them.
Not happening. No strudel for you.
Nobody east.
I don't even know if that's a Swedish thing, actually. Yeah.
But it should be.
It's that part of the world, isn't it?
It sounds like it should be. It's so a musical
Germany
word.
Germany or Denmark, something like that. Yeah,
you know, nobody sure. east of Poland. You know.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And so that's obviously, that's that. So that's another country off. So no UK, no...
No France, I think, by implication of this sort of rule that they're not going to renew licences for Huawei and ZTE in a few years' time.
Cool.
So they're sort of doing a similar thing that the UK is doing by giving a long time
and
to
Germany's
out.
Sort of gone there now, hasn't it?
I don't know,
It still hasn't made an outright
it's not
pronouncement.
Not really done anything that... I mean, they're kind of... Because there's all this stuff about what's happening at the European level with these reviews that say having high-risk vendors in the core is not a good idea. They've sort of made the decision that they're not going to do that. And I think Deutsche Telekom's trying to get rid of Huawei in its core network.
Yeah.
And so are the other operators. But on the radio side, they're massive in Germany, Huawei. I mean, that's got to be their biggest... I would think that's got to be their biggest European market. You know, they're heavily involved in Deutsche Telekom's 5G rollout. They seem to do a lot for the other players as well.
In Bonn, Germany.
You know, that's a huge deal still, that what happens to that business, really. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of clear guidance.
No, well, there'll be a hell of a lot of diplomatic pressure going on there. On more on that in a sec. So anyway, but one by one, they're falling down.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the big one will be, you know, right now the European Commission's got this toolbox.
Yeah, that's it, yeah, yeah.
Which kind of skirts around it. It just says, you know, careful out there.
Yeah.
It's about what it says, you know, just watch out. But it doesn't say anything definitive. But at some stage, they probably do have to say something definitive, especially as individual countries keep joining the fun.
Yeah.
I mean, was it Belgium or Holland or both? They've joined in recently as well.
Well, Belgium's obviously got the two companies, Orange and Proximus, have decided that involved a swap,
that's
I think, didn't
what
it?
I'm thinking of.
So, you know, they've gone that way. You've got TDC in Denmark has gone from Huawei to Ericsson. You've got some of the Scandinavian companies out. I mean, Norway is it? That's
actually,
gone
I wrote this week, there was I was surprised at how many reads it got. My headline was something like Telia surprises nobody by going with Ericsson and Nokia. And it was one of those afternoon ones. I had a look around. It had been, I got the little insight into the sort of journalistic MO here. You know, I'd had their press release in my inbox, and I sort of opened up the email just as a little reminder. But I was looking around, and if there'd been something a bit more exciting, I wouldn't have covered it. But there wasn't, so I was like, "Fuck it, that'll do." You know, 4:30. Just taking the dog for a walk. Got to get something done to justify my existence before I clock off for the day. And obviously, you know, especially as it come just after Sweden had made that announcement, there's no way it was going to be anything other than those two vendors. But for some reason, it got loads of reads.
Look at you. You're not even trying and you're smashing it.
Well, that's it, man. That's why I get the big bucks.
Talent.
It's like Rafael Nadal at the French Open.
You can't teach
just
this kind of
shit.
Yeah, I know. That was surprisingly one-sided final, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So, although I got... I can't remember if it was the last pod of the pod before that I gave Mary Clark a shout out, but I sent her friends with her on Facebook, and I got one of those little birthday reminders. I went, "Oh, is it your birthday?" And she went, "Cheers," and then she went, "By the way, I like that headline." So maybe that was it.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I thought it was just fairly
standard. What was the headline?
Just like Telia surprises nobody by going with this. I thought it was a fairly standard level of sark.
Yeah.
But obviously it tickled a couple of funny bones. But I suppose it's just, you know, I've been, telecoms.com has just been getting loads of reads. People obviously just want every little incremental data point, every little anecdotal piece of evidence about how the great geopolitical power struggle is going.
Yeah.
And God, I mean, you should see the comments section. It's a goddamn car crash on some of the stories, because people just get straight into the pure geopolitics. I mean, they're not talking about telecoms at all anymore.
Yeah.
It's like USA shit, China shit, rah, rah, rah. Just invoking random bits of semi-relevant history to prove their point. It's like a sort of real Twitter bun fight in our comments. In fact, there was one story, we might as well sort of move on to it, that got tons of reads this week. And my headline was, China imposes export controls as ECTA denounces Huawei ban. So I think the reason this got reads is the export controls bit, because obviously ever since the US started imposing export controls on Huawei stuff, which has got so bad that, you know, I wrote a story yesterday being genuinely surprised that Huawei was able to launch a flagship phone.
Yeah.
Because it can't get anyone to make its chips for it anymore. It's got a very good chip. Its latest 5-nanometer process chip's called Kirin 9000. Sounds like it's dog's bollocks. As good as the A14, Pierre.
Mm. I'll see it when I read the benchmark.
Yeah,
I believe it.
Your benchmark. Obsessed with benchmarks. He goes, no, look, it is better at this.
I don't care.
I know. I know you didn't. Otherwise, I wouldn't try and wind you up and do an insulting French accent in the process. And they've designed this great chip, but they can't make it themselves. They don't have the fabbing capacity. Yeah. There's only two chip designers in the world that can make their own chips, which is Intel and Samsung.
Yeah.
Everyone else relies on third-party ones, of which by far the biggest is TSMC. So TSMC will make Apple's chips, TSMC will make Qualcomm's chips, and so on. So they can't do that, but somehow they've stashed what I read estimates of about 10 million of these Kirin 9000 dog's bollocks chips, and they've made a debut in this phone they launched this week called the Mate 40. Pro was the specific one they were talking about. So, you know, fair play. If they've managed to get 10 million of those into the market, which would probably almost entirely be sold in China, by the way. They've done a UK launch. It costs 1,200 quid.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
Bloody expensive.
And you cannot
it?
Get I mean... Android.
Well, this is what I was just leading up to. It's all very well them doing a UK launch, and by the sounds of it, the specs are great, cameras great, chips great, screens great, etc. But if it's got a shite version of Android on it...
So it's already... You can, it's already done.
Yeah, they've stopped being able to get the Play Store on for about 6 months or so, maybe all of this year.
Oh, right.
I've forgotten precisely when. But basically, you can't get the full App Store experience at all.
Well, and also the maps are different. There's a few things.
Yeah, well, quite.
Gmail is not
there. Yeah, so you can't get Google products either.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the way it works with Android. Android's an open source thing.
Mm.
But... Google cleverly went, it's open source, but you can only get a shite version unless you follow our rules.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're not actually punishing Huawei for not following their rules. They're just, Trump says that, you know, if you're American, you can't even say the word Huawei without getting put in prison. So that's that. So I don't think they're going to sell many of these things in the UK, even though it's available.
Especially with the, I think Samsung came out with a new phone as well, on top of the iPhone 12. So that's...
Right.
Very
much. Yeah. I mean, just why? But why would you? I mean, I've been writing this for years. Why would you get? There's so many good Android phones out there. Why would you get one with a rubbish version of Android? It just doesn't make any sense at all. Yeah. So I think they're going to ship most of them in China, but that could be their last hurrah. I mean, I don't expect to see their quarterlies breaking out the smartphone division anytime soon. Because if it's already that bad,
but even in China, Chinese people are okay with
Yeah, no one has full fat Android in China.
Really?
Yeah, well, it's the Communist Party restricts all kinds of things. You can't get Facebook and Twitter either.
Oh, right. So, I mean, so they're not going to miss Google Maps anyway?
No.
Or Gmail or...
No, there's a whole...
So you can still install WeChat, for example?
Exactly.
You can't check Gmail over there.
Okay. Yeah, no, you can. Google is there, but it's somehow very slow.
Well, it's very... I mean, I remember being with you in Wuhan, not being able to access a load of sites.
Yeah,
but Google, great firewall. You can access Google, it's just very slow.
Can access Google.
Yeah, and there's, and if you do, someone's probably spying on you, and if you're not saying all the right stuff.
If you type in things like Xi Jinping should be executed,
no,
he's a nasty authoritarian bastard, then you get someone visiting your hotel room.
You're not going to China anytime soon, are you?
You heard about that, what's the one that Winnie...
Yeah, it's right, though.
That Winnie the Pooh picture of Xi Jinping.
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh. Well, he apparently doesn't like that. Actually, I saw a clip, you know, they've started up Spitting Image again. And I just saw a clip come up on Twitter. They've done sort of Xi Jinping doing a TikTok dance. And, you know, it's exactly the sort of thing that you could imagine would completely enrage him. Because, you know, anyone who's a dictator, and let's just call it what it is, the way in which they maintain their position is to have this cult of personality where they're sort of demigod-like.
Well, they're all
status.
Narcissists, aren't they?
Narcissists, yeah. But they also need to project this perfection, which is why they can't handle satire and having the piss taken out of them. And this Spitting Image
thing—they
just didn't pull their punches at all. I was quite impressed.
It's very good that that's back, actually, doing things like
that. Yeah, yeah. I was quite impressed at how cheeky they were, because you get this—you know—back to the geopolitical thing and like the Sweden ban. Another story that did really well for me this week was, I've taken to reading the Chinese press a lot more, because I know all the Chinese press is, if not censored, then if you're running if you're running Global Times or something like that, let alone Xinhua, the press agency, you know you're not going to keep your job for very long.
Yeah.
If you put up stuff that says anything other than China kicks ass again. It's all quite 1984 in that way. You know, like the bulletins, it's always like talking about victories and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I tell you, you go on to Global Times. I mean, this week, there was all this stuff. They're commemorating the 70th anniversary of the Korean War. And it's all very jingoistic. It was like the 70th anniversary of us kicking America's ass, and we'll do it again if they give us any lip. And it's all like, whoa.
Wow.
So there's a lot of saber-rattling going on in the Chinese press. Anyway, and there was another thing, basically quoting a Chinese sort of senior diplomat, maybe the foreign minister or something, just basically going, "You better watch your ass, Sweden," because it's all quite mafioso. Like, be a shame if anything happened to Ericsson, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
what the undertone of what he was saying was.
Yeah,
and I mean, on one level, I can't blame him for it. It's like, well, okay, you ban Huawei, how about we ban Ericsson? How do you like them apples?
Yeah.
In a purely reciprocal sense, you can't really fault them. Of course, you know, they'd have to trump up some charges. They couldn't just go, well, then we're doing it too.
Yeah.
But
this is the interesting thing, though, isn't it? Because they've already trumped up some charges. And this didn't really come out in the earnings update, but Ericsson's under investigation in China at the moment for patents abuses.
Oh, that's rich.
Yeah. But it has been for a while now, and those cases normally get resolved with someone being told they need to pay more or whatever and settle up.
Yeah.
But what, you know, it's not inconceivable that might play out with China.
They can escalate it however they want.
These patents abuses are unacceptable, and therefore we're taking the decision to ban Ericsson from the Chinese market from now on, and just try and justify it on that basis, you know?
Yeah.
Or they could. What about all the corruption allegations that were made by the, and they ended up paying this $1 billion settlement to the DOJ
in the US? Yeah.
What if the I mean, because there was always this thing when that happened. What if other jurisdictions decide to pursue you on some of this stuff because they haven't?
Yeah, you paid off DOJ. What about
if China came out and said, "Well, hang on a minute. Yeah, we're not just going to impose a fine. We're going to actually ban you from operating in the Chinese market for what you did."
So that begs another question. So, you know, we alluded to earlier how Ericsson initially took a sort of one-off hit for the cost of doing business in China, which, you know, I interpreted as more bits falling off. So distracting. Hell. It's like the studio's got leprosy or something.
Scabies.
Yeah. Which I interpreted it as them basically having to drop their pants on price.
Mm.
because I think they've specifically said it's a write down on some gear. So, you know, obviously with accounting, you book it. You know, if you say that one base station, you account for 10 grand for it,
yeah,
then that's in your, that's on your accounts. And if suddenly you're giving it away for 5 grand, you have to reflect that in the accounts, don't you? But maybe, you know, maybe Ericsson's also been playing a smart game in terms of making sure everyone in the sort of bureaucracy in China who needs to be kept sweet
is being kept sweet.
So I suppose that would make it slightly complicated if they were trying to do them for corruption. But anyway.
Well, this is why some of these other countries haven't pursued them, because it was the officials getting bribed, wasn't
yes,
it?
So they indeed.
Wouldn't. But there might be something they can do. And there's definitely concern about it, that they and Volvo could be, I think that's the other big one, isn't it? Volvo, because they sell a load of cars in China, that they could be, you know, sort of
yeah.
turfed
well,
out
very
of China
exposed.
For doing this. And that would massively upset. I mean, given that all the growth has come from the Chinese market pretty much in the last quarter, and they've made this big thing about how important it is to have a presence there, that would be a massive upset for Ericsson. I mean, imagine what's going to happen to its share price if it got told that it can't operate in China anymore.
Yeah, and it's not like it would be a problem. You know, like over here when we do it, we've got all the operators going, well, this is going to cost us. In China, they just, you know, the operators aren't going to give them
well,
any lift,
just,
are they?
No, exactly. So I mean, it wouldn't finish Ericsson off. That's the thing, because it's just one market and it's got a small share.
But
it's a big thing because
and
it's
And it would be a big escalation
so
in the geopolitical side of things.
Yeah.
It's like the hypocrisy of the West is like, we want them to do well so we can sell them stuff, but not too well.
Well, yes, you're completely right, Pierre. I mean, that is the broader sort of meta-narrative of what's going on here, is we were all applauding. You know, let's not forget, China 50 years ago was backwater.
No, 30 years ago.
Or even 30 years ago. Mm. And it's grown massively. And one of the biggest reasons it's grown is because what we've effectively done is export sort of deflation in terms of wages. That's, you know, that's why Trump won in 2016.
Yeah.
Because he picked up on this China stuff. But it wasn't just China are being all horrid in the way that he might characterise them now. He's talking about sort of blue-collar jobs going over to China, because China's like the manufacturing engine of the whole world, isn't it? So there's always going to be a sort of demographic trap there,
yeah.
Because as everyone gets richer,
yeah.
then you lose your differentiation.
No one gives a shit anymore, because it's all going to be done by robots, so...
Mm. Which China will probably get really good at. I mean, I think no one's arguing that Shenzhen is probably still ahead of everywhere else in the world in terms of... manufacturing, both capacity and capability.
And that's an interesting thing in the telecom sector. You look at what Ericsson's doing with its, you know, smart factories now. It's got one in Texas, I think, that has about 100 people, where they say they can do everything they need for the North American market.
And they've done
the
same in their head.
China. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like this, you know, these sort of Tesla robot factories that are vast and there's nobody in them, and they crank out the most sophisticated cars on the planet.
So that's a future. But then that'll be a problem for China as well, because as is well documented, there's quite a lot of people in China.
Yes.
And they've got to do something.
Yeah.
And now, you know, there'll still be some kind of hinterland, but a hell of a lot more of the Chinese population is now middle class, for want of a better term, than it was
a lot that
30 years ago.
Yeah, like you said, there's still a lot of people that aren't, and they need to be found jobs.
Well, they need to be found, but what about these middle class? What if, you know... What if they suddenly are struggling for jobs and they're used to having this, you know...
Well, they'll have to open up a few new concentration camps, won't they?
Oh, hello.
Oh, you know, I think...
That escalated quickly.
Not to switch subject really quickly, but...
We're definitely not going to China.
I think, didn't China added the most billionaires this year, and they're now first in terms of amounts of billionaires?
Well, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Yeah. I mean, the other things they're doing well is, you know, I've sort of read articles by venture capitalists basically saying the VC culture and the innovation culture in China is what Silicon Valley was 20 years ago, and now is not so much.
Yeah.
So anyway, the export ban thing. So they've now passed a law. In fact, I got a bit
is
of lip
this
in
a new
the
topic.
No, this is something I mentioned a minute ago before we went off on random. Right. The final topic's going to be open, Ren, for your little captions, mate. Which we'll better get onto soon, I suppose. Yeah. The US has got this export ban against Huawei, which means it can't get chips and it can't buy stuff off American companies, and it's basically killing it off slowly. I think, you know, we can assume that it's going to be fine for a while as long as the Chinese 5G rollout happens.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be selling any smartphones outside of China for a while, and it will struggle to sell them in China if it can't find the chips for them.
Yeah.
And it's increasingly relying on China for its networking stuff, notwithstanding sort of Africa and Middle East and other places that haven't got a sort of horse in the US versus China race. So China's finally got round to coming up with its own sort of export ban framework. It hasn't specifically banned anyone yet, but it's passed a law that says it can. And it's used just exactly the same kind of vague justification that the Americans do. Anything that basically harms our interests. So in other words, anything we don't like.
Yeah. Well, they could just say the same thing, couldn't they? That it's a security threat to China.
Quite. They could say whatever.
And Ericsson has facilities in the US and it's got lots of employees there. It's basically a big US company as well as a big Swedish one.
Therefore, so they could do it to Ericsson or they could do it to any other American company. I mean, the most obviously, if they wanted to have the highest impact, the most obvious one would be Apple.
Yeah. This is probably where it's going, unfortunately.
Seems to be, and that's where.
And this is why we keep talking about this big mega trend of like balkanization, you know, and the world going back to being regionalized. And
yeah,
I remember speaking. I mean, slightly changing the topic, but I remember speaking to InterDigital this week about 6G. You probably got asked as well. Do you want to speak to InterDigital, didn't you, by our friends at CC Group?
Because they represent for some reason them. I didn't.
But I mean, the interesting thing to me about 6G at the moment is not what 6G does. Because it basically sounds like it's just even more bandwidth and it's as unimaginative as that, really, as far as I can gather. But it's the fact that it could be the first standard since going back to the days of 3G when things were quite regionalised, I think, still. It could be going back that way, I think.
Oh, really? I wasn't aware of.
Well, that's
so
not...
So, like, CDMA versus GSM and that sort of thing?
Yeah, but this is what people have been speculating, that 6G, with what's happening at the moment, that we're now heading towards another fragmentation of the standards system.
Right.
And that does the 3GPP even survive? Well, how can it work at the moment? I mean, the 3GPP is all about... You know, meeting up with Ericsson meets up with people from Huawei and they all collaborate.
And if the Americans are saying you can't share any techie information with
And it's
the
really
Chinese.
Interesting with Ericsson, like Ekholm specifically came out with this on the earnings call when he was asked about China pressure and the fact that they might get, you know, that there's a risk of a pushback in China. He said, well, I think the way the systems work so far is great that we cooperate with Huawei when we're building standards and we'd never want to lose that. You know, we don't want to have this. He didn't use the word, but there's the implication that we don't want to go to a world where we're using two or three standards.
Yeah.
And you lose all those global economies of scale that have made companies like Ericsson very wealthy, obviously, and they've done very well out of it.
Yeah, and also, you know, in that sort of globalist way, you know, if wherever you are,
we've all done well out of it, I think. So, but I find it hard. I mean, InterDigital was quite optimistic this wouldn't happen. But I find it quite hard to see how it won't at the moment, really, unless there's a big change in political tone. And
And there's just one more thing on the geopolitical stuff before I move it on. I'm just reminded that there's a story about the US offering Brazil money not to use Huawei.
Right.
So there's direct sort of financial incentives, there's diplomatic pressure. There seems to be barely a week when Mike Pompeo isn't flying around to some European
capital. That's his job, isn't it, basically, to fly around
and tell people not to use Huawei.
Yeah. You know, he's a big AC/DC fan.
Is he?
Yeah. So he probably sings Huawei to hell instead.
There we go. That's the one. He's here all week, ladies and gentlemen. Well, quite. Okay, we better move it on because we've got to wrap it up in 10 or 15 minutes.
Before we move on, I want to give a shout-out to our listeners in Atlanta.
Atlanta, is it?
Yeah, Georgia.
We've been doing well there.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's good.
Shout out to the good state of Georgia.
Yeah, thanks, Atlanta. I don't know what we did. What is it? Is AT&T based there?
No, they're down in Dallas,
Texas.
I think.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Is anyone based there?
Walking Dead's film there, isn't it?
What about Warner?
Warner Media?
HBO?
Maybe.
I'm thinking of something. Something's based there. Anyway, fuck it.
People are shouting, like, it's there!
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to try and do an Atlanta accent, partly because I don't know what one is.
Yeah, me neither.
It's a little bit deep south, isn't it? It's getting down that way.
But I'd probably end up sounding like Scarlett O'Hara or something. okay, so the final thing, Open RAN again.
Yeah.
Having skipped it. So I'm going to hand it over to you. There have been some sort of forecasts about the size of the market.
Yeah, there have. Yeah, everybody's getting excited about Open RAN. You know, lots of operators are asking for it at the moment. There's a lot of hype, I think, going around. And there have been a few companies coming out with projections about how big the market's going to be in the next few years. And I mean, we're talking quite silly numbers, I think, in some cases. There's a report from a company called ABI Research that I think attached a $40 billion figure to Open RAN macro sales.
In
2026.
Right.
And then one from Rethink Research that put it at about $32 billion, I think, at about the same time.
Right.
So, yeah, the thing about sales on that scale is that you know, if you're strictly talking RAN only and not broader sort of wireless CapEx, if that's what those companies mean, and it's possible that they're including other things in the, right. in the picture, you're talking about a huge growth in the RAN market itself, you know, unless... You know, even if traditional RAN stuff disappears, that market apparently at the moment's worth between about $30 billion and $35 billion a year in revenues.
So they're projecting more value for Open RAN than the current total size of the RAN market.
Yeah, and as I say, we have to be fair to them that perhaps they are bundling other costs in there.
Okay.
And mispresenting perhaps the headline as RAM, when in actual fact they mean some other bits of the wireless equipment market as well.
And maybe bits of software
Even if we do that, they're still saying... So I think I've got this right. Rethink is saying that Open RAN is going to have a 58% share of the RAN market by 2026.
And as opposed to none now?
As opposed to pretty much none, about 1% or 2% or so for that.
It's even that much, is it?
Okay, well, you can work out the maths. According to Dell'Oro, which is pretty reliable, I think, it's $200 million in revenues this year.
Okay.
And the market's about $33 billion, let's say. So it's not even 1%, is
no.
it? Rethink was saying 58%, and I think ABI is saying 45% share by 2026 of the overall RAN market. So what they're both anticipating, basically, is some kind of revolution that takes place in the next few years where most of the world's operators go, these traditional products that we're getting are no good. We need to have big swap outs. We need to take all this equipment out and bring in new interoperable stuff.
Well, they're
building loads and loads of new radio sites and spending money that they've not spent before on top of what they've already done.
Maybe factored into their model is the greater site density required by 5G.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a factor.
But they've still got to assume that people bother to do that. And right now, I saw Light Reading did it, and I've certainly covered this before. I think Verizon's quarterlies came out, and there was a Light Reading story saying how they're serving 0.5% of the country with 5G or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because they focused on millimeter wave, which is, you know, as we say, has got no range at all.
Yeah. You have to be sitting on the base station to use it.
Yeah. And getting a warm bum while you download things at the speed of light. So they're not gonna suddenly build a zillion millimeter wave things so that everyone can get that. I think we're only ever in the foreseeable future gonna get the kind of super duper speed 5G in the centre of cities.
Yeah, yeah. I think the problem with some of these Open RAN sort of projections, I mean, it's not... If you look at it sort of capturing that much of a... So, I mean, going back to Dell'Oro, their forecast is that they reckon by 2025 or thereabouts, Open RAN's probably going to have something like 10% of the market, which to me sounds quite realistic. That sounds plausible. Because there's a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of interest in using it. There are some rollouts happening with greenfield operators.
Well, let me just stress, you know, another thing that will probably factor is the political will.
Yeah.
From the US.
Political will, yeah. And you'll see some brownfield operators as well using it in certain instances and certain deployments. But the trouble is, you know, one, the technology itself is still very much unproven. We keep saying this. It's still not the only company, as far as I'm aware, that's actually using it in a advanced urbanized setting is Rakuten in Japan at the moment.
Right.
And it's only got a million applications. We don't even know if they're subscribers, a million applications.
Yes, applicants. Yeah.
Which means its site density is a lot, you know, the number of people per site is presumably quite a lot less. And so even though they're measuring up and it looks like the metrics are good and people are happy, it's still really not proven until we get a lot more sort of volumes on that network. And anything that does suggest that it's having problems would be a real kick for Open RAN, I think.
Yeah.
It would upset the way it's progressing. The other thing is, for other operators that have already got their traditional gear installed, you can't just switch like the flick the switch and go to Open RAN like that. You have to do a swap out of the kind that's now happening with, you know, people moving from Huawei to Ericsson.
Yes, which is why it's easier for a greenfield operator
yeah.
like Rakuten.
And you're going to do that and move to something that's, you know,
relatively unproven,
and there's still big question marks over doing it in, you know, with things like massive MIMO and higher performing networks. It might be good for sort of, you know, areas that are in rural communities and, you know, with sort of lower bandwidth technologies. But to do it on a 5G network in a, you know, across a city is a very risky thing to do. And you'd be swapping out equipment that you're just installing at the moment for 5G.
So, and why would you do it?
Why would you do
What's
it?
The incentive?
This is the problem.
I mean,
yeah.
the only real USP I've ever heard for Open RAN is price.
Yeah, I mean, I think they want Open RAN there because there is a concern about vendor diversity, you know, and especially.
But why is there that concern? The concern is that with a duopoly, that you can get screwed on price.
I think it's partly price. I think it's partly security.
Okay.
Because if something happens to those companies, it's the same argument with Huawei. Really, you're very dependent on one. You become
yeah.
very dependent on one company, don't you? And that's not a safe
nightmare.
Thing to be.
No,
yeah, I mean,
definitely.
Ericsson a few years ago looked like it might even get broken up and sold off. And then, who knows? You just don't know what could happen. It's not a good thing to have that much dependence.
So, yeah,
I think, on a
you're right.
Vendors,
it's that sort of plurality of supply.
Yeah.
Which is perfectly reasonable.
Which is perfectly reasonable. But
at what cost in terms of the durability and
But I just think it's going to take a lot longer than people are imagining. And the other thing is, I mean, if we look at the sort of broader assumption about how much money is going to get spent on RAN equipment in the next few years, it's just not, you know, all right, we've got densification of networks, we've got enterprise networks and private networks that are taking off perhaps. You know, it's conceivable that we might see more money going into that market, but it's got to be sort of matched at the other end, at the end user side of things. You know, you look at the service revenues and how much gets generated each year. And the perception is it's always very much flat, isn't it? You know, operators never really seem to be able to shift the amount
right.
of money up. They're not going to start spending vast amounts of money on equipment if they can't
yeah.
make that money back themselves. You know, if we carry on, if the only end user is you and me using our 5G phones and spending 20 quid a month on them or whatever it might be, maybe even less than that if some super competitive offer comes along from a rival. You know, and they're still not making much money out of IoT, and the enterprise case is still unproven, then they're not going to be going out and spending vast amounts of money on. How would they ever justify that to their investors, and how would they
and
ever make
I,
money?
Can I make one more point to back up your scepticism about these forecasts? As we've just got through saying, the Chinese market is massive. So, yeah, the Americans want Open RAN to have greater diversity of supply, and maybe that applies to Latin America and Western Europe and all that sort of thing. But what incentive does China Mobile have to get involved in Open RAN? When presumably the Communist Party is saying, make sure Huawei and ZTE don't go out of business.
Yeah.
They're under completely different kinds of competitive pressures anyway.
They are, yeah.
So they seem to be assuming the Chinese market's going to behave the same way as the US market, which is a very flawed assumption, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think why Chinese operators might take an interest in Open RAN is if you think there's a sort of innovation argument there as well, that maybe Open RAN gives rise to...
Yeah,
because,
and they don't want to get left behind.
And they don't want to get left
yeah.
behind because it might throw up, you know, innovative radio designs that are more appropriate for an indoor setting, let's say, or something in the future. And they don't want to get, like you said, they don't want to get left behind.
But, so they'll stay in the R&D, but the likelihood of China Mobile just swapping out a lot,
yeah,
seems small.
Yeah, certainly the whole reason that we have interest in it in Europe is because operators want vendor diversity, and like you say, there's no push for that to happen in China. There's no obvious
yeah.
reason why that would.
So I've got
happen.
One last. We better wrap up because I think we're coming up to the hour mark, and Pierre's got shit to do.
Yep,
and we've got to go to a pub.
Who's that?
Just one last quick thing to point out. A little bit of news this week was Qualcomm announcing they were getting into the base station game. Now, they're not trying to compete with Ericsson, Nokia, Huawei, etc. They're talking about chips. But basically, the reason Qualcomm's doing it is because if the Open RAN thing happens, then it's open season on whoever supplies the chips. Because, you know, the whole point of Open RAN is that you assemble a base station like you would a PC or whatever,
yeah,
and cherry-pick your components.
And they've been active in the Rakuten's deployment, Qualcomm.
Have they?
Actually been doing chips for,
right,
for some of the base stations that are being used there.
So they had an announcement, yeah, this week. They had one of their big
summits. That's interesting. I missed that one. But
yeah, they had one of their big summits, and they basically announced special sort of carrier grade,
wow,
silicon.
That's might, probably come partly out of the Rakuten
it,
stuff.
Might
I
covered
think
it for you guys.
Oh, I missed his story. I'll have to look,
yeah,
it up.
So anyway, so that's the other thing to throw into the Open RAN mix. Okay, we better wrap it up there.
Yep.
So thank you very much for watching, and make sure you join us for the next one.